Today is May 20th, 2015, and this is episode number 307 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin. What am I? Co-publisher and editor-in-chief at TMO.
And I'm Bob Levitis, and I'm not. No, I'm a author, a raconteur, and a involuntary auteur. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
So what happened to Jeff? You don't actually know, do you?
Jeff is somewhere hot and sweaty.
Yeah, he is, actually. He's in New Orleans doing the Aces Conference.
That's it. I knew it.
I appreciate you helping out with the show this week.
Well, it's my pleasure. I thought I was playing Jeff, so I'm not wearing pants.
Fair enough. Technically, I guess you're playing me and I'm playing Jeff. But either way, it's good to have you. We very much appreciate it. So, in honor of you being here, let's actually talk about your column this week at the Mac Observer.
Okay. I like talking about my column.
Fair enough. It's a good one. So what you had some advice for us, so tell us about it.
Well, it was a weird deal. Somebody said to me, if you could only give me one piece of advice to be more productive on my Mac, what would it be? And I was stumped. It's like, gosh, I just didn't know. So after a while, you know, a few days of thinking about it, it came to me. And somebody commented on it, and I think the comment might be even more right on than the column, which is basically keyboard shortcut. You know, if I could give you one tip, it would be keyboard shortcut. But the one that's not so obvious is redundancy. You know, your Mac gives you lots of ways to do a lot of things that you do frequently, and in many cases, one of the ways to do it will be more convenient or faster than the others. And if you know what all of them are, you can elect to choose the one that'll be the most expedient. But if you don't know what they are, then you always do it the same way, which is probably not the fastest way to get something done.
So you're saying that in context, different ways of doing the same thing will sometimes be faster than other ways of doing that same thing.
Absolutely. And no, you know, here's my example. Launching an application, there's got to be at least 6 or 7 different ways built into OS X. But knowing that you can do it all these different ways, you can elect to use the one that's going to be the quickest. If you just need it to open and your hands are on the keyboard, a keyboard shortcut's the fastest. If you need to open a specific document in a specific application, dragging the document onto either an alias or the dock icon of the application might be the most expedient way to open it. Double-clicking documents to open an application, if you've got the document in front of you, that might be the fastest way. But the point is, you know, it just depends on what's on your screen, where your fingers are.
Well, one of the things you pointed out that I had completely forgotten about is the fact that you can add shortcuts to applications to your Finder toolbars.
Yes, and I was playing around. I knew you could do it, and I couldn't remember how, so I was pressing down Option and Command and, you know, different combinations. And it turns out if you press the Command key and drag anything onto the toolbar of a Finder window, it stays there permanently.
Does that include files?
Yeah, you can do files or folders, I believe. Here, I could tell you in 2 seconds. That's an easy one to try. Here, a folder. Yes, folders go.
I'll be darned.
Anything you want. Now, that's pretty valuable real estate, and I'm not sure you want a packet full of stuff, but if there's a few things that you use all the time, it would make sense to have them at the top of every window, wouldn't it?
Well, especially anything that you routinely want to drag files onto.
Correctamundo. Even better than an alias on the desktop.
Yeah. Oh, much better.
Because
you can
actually buried.
See.
Right.
It gets buried. So, yeah, I'd completely forgotten you can do that. And, that's a super-duper tip. But the idea of simply being proficient for the sake of being flexible, that is fantastic advice.
Well, it took a long time to come up with it because I'm trying to think, you know, okay, keyboard shortcuts, keep your fingers on the keys. I mean, everybody gives that advice. I was trying to think how could I distill everything I've been teaching people for years? Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that one of the things I always teach when I teach people how to use a Mac is more than one way to accomplish most tasks. Because some people are keyboard-oriented, some people are mouse-oriented, some people are visual, some people are auditory. And if there's, a couple of ways to do it, I try to say, you could also do this by... And I want them to have that in their bank of possible paths, because knowing it is the key. It's not so much using it as just knowing it's there. Now, once you've got them all, once you got that good awareness of all the things that are possible, you can set it up to work the way you work. And your example about stuff in the toolbar for dragging documents on, exactly. The only things that are in my toolbar are apps that accept dragged files that I might not want to open in whatever opens when I double-click them.
Right, yeah. For me, that would be Photoshop, because
exactly.
Apple wants to make all JPEGs open in Preview by default.
Right.
And Preview doesn't do anything for me. I definitely need to open images in Photoshop so that I can manipulate them as part of my job. So,
well, I switched permanently. I mean, that one, I've got everything. If I double-click a graphic, it'll open in Photoshop, not Preview. And I do it the other way. It's like if I need to open a graphic in Preview for some reason, I drag it to the dock icon.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. That's good. That's good advice.
Only because it's easy enough to do. It's like I took a JPEG and I got info on it, and I said, always open every JPEG with Photoshop, please.
Sure.
Every TIFF, Photoshop.
Sure.
The only thing I let Preview open is PDFs.
Makes sense. Why don't you open them something like PDF Pen Pro or one of the various excellent PDF editing docs?
I use PDF Pen Pro a lot, but most of the time I'm not editing them. I'm just looking at them, and Preview opens way faster. If I'm not going to edit it, I just launch it in whatever's going to open fastest, which I think is Preview.
Sure.
If I have to edit, they go into PDF Pen Pro for sure.
All right. Well, one of the things that we talked about before during our pre-show prep was you said there were lots of examples that you didn't get into in the column.
Yes.
So give us some.
Okay. Another example that I didn't get into in the column of multiple ways of doing things is how to find things. And the whole spotlight, everybody knows you can just press Command Space and type a word and you'll get a list of stuff. But if you start in a Finder window, it works a little differently. It'll search that directory rather than searching globally your whole system. And if you start it by Command Spacebar, I don't know that there's any way you can then narrow the scope to only this folder or this folder and its subfolders.
No, you can't.
If you start it that way, right. But it's the same search. I mean, it's doing the same thing. It's just where you start it matters. And so for me, a lot of times I will find a window and get to where I want to be, because otherwise I'm going to get too many irrelevant results. And if I know I'm looking for something that I'm going to get a lot of hits on, I'll try to get to the parent folder I try to get as close to the target folder as I can if I know where it might be. But
sure.
Certainly I don't want to... I've got 5 hard disks and 3 of them are indexed for Spotlight, so certainly I don't want a global search for something I know is in the pictures folder.
Right.
So that's one. It seems like those searches are all the same, but they're not.
That makes sense. Lay another one on us.
Let me see if I can think of another one. I had a couple others that I was going to write up and I was running out of space. All right, come back to that. I'm going to pass. Let's go on to the bonus round, and I'll come back to that one.
All right, well, let's actually then... Yeah, all right, so I have a topic that partially involves you and also is partially much bigger. So I know that you're doing a TV show now.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what's it called?
It's called the BobLevitis.tv show.
That makes a lot of sense. And how are you distributing this?
Any way I can. I'll come to your house and show it to you on my iPad. I will direct you to its YouTube page. You can go to boblevitis.tv. Did you know that you can get domains called .tv?
Yes.
Well, so I'm boblevitis.tv, and that's okay. Where the show lives, and you can watch all of the episodes. And in fact, here's a little known fact. You could binge watch the entire first season so far in under an hour.
Fair enough. And now, I know the answer to this, but I'm going to pretend like I don't. What are you actually showing
stuff.
On the TV shows?
Oh, stuff. No, it's about Apple products and it's really about everything that interests people who use Apple products.
So, and where are you getting the majority of your traffic?
I'd say
YouTube.
Yeah, half. Most of it's from YouTube, and the rest is people that know me that know boblevitis.tv is where you can watch them without having to find them on YouTube. And you know, every once in a while, somebody writes something or mentions it somewhere, and I get a little spike. I'm not really doing it to build a huge audience. My ultimate goal is to get a cable TV show, and I consider these my demos. I'm just doing them. And when I get enough, I'm going to try to put together a reel that I can present to, you know, Comedy Central or the History Channel and say, hey, you know what? Not to slam your reality program that you run now. Yeah, I guess I have to. They kind of suck. And don't you think this would be more fun?
Sure.
You know, it's like I'm positive I could entertain people like us way better than... Honey Boo Boo or whatever, or the Pawn Stars, the Pawn Shop Guys, or the Pickers, or there's a million
one of
them.
Most popular shows on the
oh, I know,
on cable right now.
I know, I know. That's what I'm saying, right, though. So is how many episodes of that can you watch? They run them sometimes like for 6 hours straight.
It's true. So I happen to know that you have been working on this for a long time. This is something you wanted to do for a long time.
My whole life.
Yeah. And I also happen to think that you're very, very, very good at it. My point, though, is that the realities of the internet today and technology, the realities of what kind of quality you can film right in your own office, right? The realities of the kind of quality production you can bring from your desktop. These are all things, and then more, much more importantly, the fact that you can distribute it through YouTube, through a website, it makes it possible for people to do these things, and that is essentially in the process of changing content delivery in the modern world.
For a long time. Wanted to produce video about technology. You know, I wanted to, right. to make it a topic. And I've tried before. In 1992, I had a show called Mac Today, syndicated in 113 markets. And we did 13 weeks, but we couldn't make any money at it. It was very, very, very difficult at the time to even break even. And I think if I could have broken even, I'd have done a second season, but we couldn't even do that. And the reason was, in those days, you couldn't do it and broadcast without spending real money on studio time. You couldn't just do it at your desk. Right. We had to rent a TV studio for the weekend and shoot six shows a weekend.
Well, yeah, recording quality video required expensive cameras.
Yeah, that weigh like 200 pounds, too.
Yeah.
And require a professional operator because you don't just point them and shoot. It got very costly, and if you watch the prologue to the show, you'll see my whole problem was I loved making video. I just loved it, but I hated having the meter running all the time and thinking, okay, so I could make that better, but it'll cost me $400 more.
Right.
And the ability to do this all at my desk on my time. And even better, I just I took a trip a couple weeks ago, and I took a four terabyte My Passport Pro RAID, Thunderbolt RAID, on the plane, and I edited high definition video at 35,000 feet.
Nice.
It was awesome, and it was not a kludge. I didn't feel like I was being restricted by being on an airplane. I was a little, because I had to have the hard disk in my lap. Hmm. But other than that, I did not feel restricted. I felt like I was working at home. I was in headphones and just editing away. I edited about probably an 8-minute piece on the flight. And that's something I could never have done 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Just not even remotely close to possible.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Do you remember when Avid still made hardware?
I think they still do.
Well, they may still make hardware, but it's can't be a huge part of their business.
Well, you know, the dinosaurs are slow to die, and there's still lots of, I guess there's not lots anymore, but there's still facilities that do it the old way, and there's still places where, you know, they have to receive 2-inch tape.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
But not that many. Not that many. It's like the typesetting shops of old. They are going away, and one day there'll be none left.
So you, this is what you're doing, and here's how it folds into the broader world. Because this week we had a very interesting story from the Wall Street Journal. And this was in response to an open letter from Carl Icahn trying to tell Apple's board that he thinks is doing such an incredible job how to do their job better. A little disconnect there with old Mr. Icahn, but that's okay. And part of his argument is that Apple's going to be worth a lot of money.
Gonna be?
compared to what they are today. He says that Apple stock should be valued at $240. It's trading right around 130 plus or minus a couple of bucks as of this recording. And he says that ignoring a big part of his thesis, which is that people should use a different multiplier and that people should consider a different tax rate than the tax rate Apple actually uses, which I think is just completely insane. Ignoring all that stuff, he said that Apple's going to release a TV in 2016 and dominate the TV market, and that Apple is going to dominate the automobile market by 2020. And, okay, so again, just kind of ignoring the dominating part, because I think that that's ridiculous. The very next day, or actually later that day, we had a story from the Wall Street Journal saying that Apple canceled its long-running TV set project a little more than a year ago. And to me, this was very, very clearly a leak, a controlled leak from within Apple.
Yeah, they might as well have called Carl Icahn up and told him personally.
Yeah, well, actually, I think that's part of the point. So there were two reasons, a couple of reasons for Apple giving a controlled leak. One, I think that Apple management wanted to kill this particular story once and for all. Right? Get the idea that Apple's going to be releasing a TV out of people's heads. Two, I think this was very deliberate, a very deliberate slam to Carl Icahn.
Yes, making him wrong. Making him very wrong publicly. Which I think for Apple, if that's why they did it, and if that's the strategy, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
he's a bulldog. He's hard to damage, and I, you know, with one fell swoop, they managed to make him look worse than I think any other thing I've ever seen about him, and he gets plenty of bad press.
Well, it's funny. The next day on CNBC, he actually stuck to his guns and said that Apple's going to release a TV, which is...
Oh, that's great. So Apple says... Well, wait a minute, though. Apple has a long history of lying publicly.
Yes, you know? But Apple has a long history of using controlled leaks where they're not lying.
Yes, that's true.
Controlled leaks tend to be true.
And in this case, I believe, yes, absolutely, if they leaked this on purpose to shame Carl Icahn, the TV set's out. It's gone. It's history. It's not misdirection, and it's not fake out. It's not a head fake.
Right, absolutely.
Apple's known for that, but this isn't one.
Yeah, well, Apple uses the public statements to do it. Steve used the public statements for the head fake. We've actually not seen a head fake from Tim Cook.
That Tim we Cook know is, of.
That we know of, correct. That we know of. And but like I said, so, and what we mean by controlled leak, this is where someone within Apple, probably Apple's PR department, but it could have been an executive, contacted someone at the Wall Street Journal and said, I've got a story for you, and but you can in no way whatsoever use my name or say that anyone in Apple told you this. And the reason why we think that's the case, Apple has absolutely done this for a long time. John Martellaro, our own John Martellaro, wrote up a piece some time ago about how Apple used controlled leaks during his day when he was a salesperson within the scientific part of Apple. And we've seen it time and again since then. And the kinds of details that came out in this story, like the kinds of ideas that they considered, things that they were working on, why they decided that these weren't compelling enough, all of these things, are just, there was so much detail in it. It just had to have come from within Apple.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. But I'm glad that they used this to kind of put Carl Icahn down, because he's the guy that, like, says, hey, you know, I own a bunch of stock, and I think you should run your company this way. And that's just craziness. It's not like Apple isn't doing a good job of running the company.
Well, okay, to be fair to Mr. Icahn, he has made himself and other shareholders an enormous amount of money over the years by doing exactly that. Carl has made a lot of money for himself and shareholders. And I mean, just an awful lot of money. So it's not like he doesn't have a track record here. The interesting thing about what you said was like how funny it is that he's telling Apple what to do, is that he himself constantly praises Apple when he does these open letters, right? He praises Apple's management and says they're doing a great job and all this stuff.
But
here's what they could, you know, here's what they should be doing. It's like I said earlier, it's a weird disconnect, in my opinion.
Well, that whole hostile shareholder kind of thing always kind of freaks me out. You know, it's like you can never be sure whose side Carl Icahn's on. And
yes, you can.
In this case,
Carl Icahn.
Well, he's on Carl Icahn's side, but I'm saying he might or might not be on Apple's side, and he might or might not be on the side of other shareholders, although current shareholders, when he makes his plays and you know, runs the stock up, benefit. But does that benefit the company? I don't know. You know, guys like him tend to leave behind empty shells.
They do. And the reality with Carl Icahn is that he's probably at a bit of a loss, in that he doesn't have the ability to manipulate Apple. Tim Cook isn't interested in what Carl Icahn has to say. Tim Cook isn't interested in Carl's ideas on how it can better use its money. Although Carl Icahn in this open letter did take credit for the shareholder returns that Apple, the programs that Apple has put in place to return money to the shareholders, he took credit for that. But that's okay.
I don't know that he gets credit for it, but he barked about it for a long time before it happened.
It's true. It was inevitable that it happened. It was inevitable. Apple absolutely had to do something with its big cash hoard. But I don't know that he gets credit for what.
I don't know that he made it happen, right. But he did put pressure on.
Right.
And he probably had some influence on having it happen sooner rather than later.
Maybe.
Okay. Maybe. I agree to maybe.
All right. So bringing this back to the other thing, we know, according to this Wall Street Journal piece, and I am personally at 100% that it's a real story that was based on a controlled leak from within Apple. There's zero doubt in my mind on that. And according to that story, Apple was in fact working on a television set. And of course, part of the television set is hardware, and part of it is having the interface for an internet-connected TV. That's the thing that Steve Jobs talked to Walter Isaacson about. And so that there's the software side of it, there's the hardware side of it. And it's the hardware side of things that Apple has canned. Right, so we know that they're not going to make this TV, but I do think that they were working on a TV. You know, it's interesting. Gene Munster talked about that TV for so long, and I always thought that there had to be fire behind that smoke.
See, and I'm actually surprised, although I can see why that would be a thought they'd entertain, but I think saner minds would say, you know what? We don't have to have the glass. We could do everything else in a box the size of an Apple TV. And, you know, the trick is going to be to get the content in it.
Yeah,
because
and
we all have boxes that are capable of playing that, and if you have the box done right, then you don't see the TV's interface, which sucks.
Which
it goes away.
They usually are awful, but at the same time, Apple's track record is to give us the end product, you know, give us a solution, not a connection.
Well, in this case, I think because big glass panels are pretty generic, really, it makes sense not to, because of all the overhead associated with it. Unless they had new technology or a better glass or better LCD or better OLED or better something that nobody else had, then getting into that game is crazy. Well, because of all the crazy overhead. Plus, where they, I guess that would be another thing that you couldn't buy at the store, because they can't inventory all that crap at the store.
Well, they
don't have any room.
They could figure out a way to do it.
No, those things are huge. Go look at a big box store. They pile them up on pallets.
All right, true enough. We know that one of the things they were experimenting with was a slab of glass that looked like a clear slab of glass until it was turned on, and then lasers would project the image inside the glass. We know that they were looking at doing cameras for FaceTime video with Siri controls. We know that they were looking at doing 4K before 4K was becoming a thing. And in the end, they just decided that all those things weren't compelling. But, you know, as I'm sitting here talking to you, Bob, I realized that I think I know what really killed it.
Carl Icahn?
Nope.
Just kidding.
I bought into the idea of Apple making an actual television set rather than just doing all this through an Apple TV set box. Is because I thought that Tim Cook was looking for a way to move the revenue needles on his watch, to introduce a new product that was going to bring a meaningful amount of new money into Apple. And now, I think that's the car.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, a car is way better than a piece of flat panel glass if you want to move big money.
It is. And considering, we know that Apple's been working on the car for somewhere between the last year and 3 years. I think that Tim Cook deciding that they could do a car may well have been the nail in the television set's coffin.
Well, those are, you know, if you think about it, those are two big, big undertakings that require massive underpinnings of infrastructure. Either one of those requires lots of stuff Apple doesn't really have set up right this second.
Right.
So I think maybe they looked at it and said, you know, even Apple could have a plate that's too full.
Yeah.
And really, where's the big impact? What will make the bigger impact? Big TVs that are really cool, or cars that drive themselves and use zero petrol, zero right. Fossil fuel.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think the answer is pretty clear. And again, if you're going to do one big game changer that's going to require you to, you know, build new infrastructure and figure out new ways to do things that you've never done before, I think the car has the way higher upside.
Yeah, probably. It really probably does. One way or another, it's gone. And one way or another, we know that Apple is still working on bundling programming.
Programming, yes.
And
I'm sure we're
going to
see a new Apple TV, because $69, that's the magic thing. It's like as soon as Tim Cook said, and we're reducing the price of, what did he say, the current?
Yes.
Apple TV?
Well,
yeah.
It's even better. Dave pointed out that the price on Apple's website says starting at $69.
Starting at $69, even though there's only one model.
Only one of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So either way, yeah. WWDC probably was
going
to get an announcement.
I'm pretty sure. And I'm not sure that it wasn't pretty close to ready before. I mean, I think they might have been able to have shown it at the watch thing in March, but they decided against it. But
I don't know.
I think maybe some of the deals weren't in place yet, because I know they're still out there chasing deals.
That's been the bugaboo for Apple, is getting the content providers on board with letting Apple make their delivery system less bad. They're terrified of that.
Less bad.
They're terrified of Apple making it work.
Yes. Well, it's sad, but, you know, the record labels, right? They used to be all powerful and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're kind of in deep doo-doo.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't Apple, it would have been somebody else. And at least Apple only takes 30%.
It's true.
You know, the next guy could have had a accent and taken 54% and told you that you're going to like it.
The thing about Apple that really freaks out the content providers is that Apple takes ownership of the customer experience, and that's what they're terrified of losing. But the reason what drives
me nuts, if they did it better,
yeah.
I wouldn't be so happy with the way Apple does it.
Exactly,
but, you know.
They only have that option because the caretakers, you know, be it of music or of video or of anything else where Apple does this, if Apple only has that opportunity because they're so bad at it. And so it drives me nuts that they...
That's their sticking point.
Yeah.
That's what... Well, it's something. It's really...
Well, okay, so this is what we came into this conversation talking about, the fact that you're doing your own TV show. And admittedly, you're not a $200,000 an episode, or $1 million, or $10 million an episode TV show, but the quality at the entry level is just getting better all the time. And
it's possible for somebody like me to do totally broadcast quality professional level work on the desktop.
Yeah,
absolutely. It didn't used to be that way. Only in the past maybe 5 years has it really been possible, and only in the past couple has it been possible in HD with anything that wasn't anchored to a desk.
Right.
Today, I can use a MacBook Pro to do a lot of what I do, and that's amazing. Mm-hmm. The ability to be able to just pull it out and do it, edit for an hour at Starbucks or on an airplane or something, that is a whole different thing from having to go to a specific place and pay $300 an hour.
It really is. It really is.
Couldn't be more pleased with Final Cut Pro. Let me just give kudos to the people who make that software. It had a rocky transition when they introduced the new metaphor, the new kind of look and feel, and a lot of people hated it. But if you stuck with it, man, it's turned into a beautiful, fluid, easy way to present visual content in up to, you know, high 4K.
Hmm.
I don't do anything in 4K because the stuff I'm doing really wouldn't benefit from it that much, and the bandwidth is crazy. But you can edit that stuff. And in fact, I had one of those new iMac 5Ks. That was amazing. Hmm. You can watch video in 4K with room for your
balance.
Timeline on the bottom and all of your stuff on the left, your buckets on the left, and still see it at full 38, whatever it is, for Ultra HD.
Right.
Unbelievable. On a $2,500, they just dropped the price, didn't they? $2,200 computer?
Yeah, it starts at $2,000 now.
$2,000.
Right.
Man.
But the same model with the slight upgrades is now $2,300.
Yes, and if you're going to do video, you might as well do that, because that is a amazing value right there for really editing video. You know, I looked when I was looking, I thought that hadn't come out when I bought my MacBook Pro, but I was considering a Mac Pro. And the problem was I needed at least one 4K display for it, and that was $2,500 at the time, which is the price of the iMac with a 5K display. Mm. So Apple throws in the computer for free. Or you could buy the Dell, which just has the display.
Right.
Now, the prices have come down since then, but this was like 9 months ago when I was making a purchase decision. And it was, if they had had the 5K iMac when I made my purchase decision, it would have been a lot harder.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was easy to decide against the Mac Pro for what I wanted to do. But that Mac, that iMac, man, 5K, $2,000.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
I have another purchase decision for you.
Okay.
It's an easy one. Lynda.com/ACM. They're our sponsors.
Are they our sponsor?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
And I say it's an easy purchase decision because they're going to give us 10 days for free for you to go and learn anything you want to learn.
Do you know what you could learn in 10 days of free learning on Lynda.com?
I know that you've been doing some stuff on Lynda. Tell us what you've been doing.
I love Lynda.com. I was just looking at some videos on editing in Final Cut Pro. I was looking for some tips to speed up my workflow. I've also used it for Photoshop stuff. When I want to learn how to do something in Photoshop, almost the first place I go to look is Lynda.com, because I just love the quality of the stuff they present. It's so easy to understand and see and pause and do it yourself. I mean, it's just, gosh, I'm a fan. So I am a fan.
They've got over 2,000 videos on innumerable topics. You can learn just about anything that you want to learn over at lynda.com/ACM, and they're going to give you 10 days to do it for free. And you get unrestricted access to everything they do. So, you know, like you can go talk about binge watching.
Swift programming.
Yeah,
Swift programming.
Excel, Photoshop.
I looked at the Swift
Acrobat
programming and I thought, I wish I wasn't so stupid about programming, because I would take that class in a heartbeat. Except I've determined that my brain doesn't do code. It's just foreign to me. Every time I've tried to learn how to code anything. But I looked at the Swift thing and I thought, you know what? Maybe there's hope for me. I could do this.
Well, you can find out for free if you sign up at lynda.com/ACM. And I mention this every time. I love the idea of learning. This is like humanity at its best is when we're learning. And being able to go and learn something for free. And once you learn it, you're going to know it. So this is like something you can keep. Right? You go,
well, and they're pricing so reasonable for $25 a month, right? You can continue to have all you want of over 2,000 videos. And they have just so many topics. I was just kind of leafing through there and I thought, gosh, there's a bunch of other stuff here that I'm kind of interested in. Like social media marketing. You know, I don't know that much about... I know how to use social media for fun, but marketing, wow, that's a whole new thing to me. I thought, I'm going to watch those one of these days.
Yeah. So, check it out, lynda.com/ACM. There are our sponsors.
Not just apps.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not just specific apps.
Yeah, definitely not. There's a lot of content there. And they and this isn't just like 2,000 videos because they've been there for a long time. They actually retire stuff when it becomes irrelevant.
Obsolete.
And obsolete.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So get to it. We appreciate them for sponsoring us, and we'd appreciate you for checking them out.
They rock.
Okay. Now we have a less fun topic.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Less fun topic. This week we had Apple and the Google and Microsoft and the EFF. Love the guys at the EFF. Love what they do.
Me too.
Love their work.
Me too.
Dropbox.
I got all their albums.
Evernote. Facebook even. About, I don't know, I think about 40 major tech companies and about 25 or 30 various civil organizations, including the EFF, and then a whole bunch of another like 40 or so, 50 security and policy experts. These folks all signed off on an open letter to the White House urging Barack Obama, President Obama, to not support, for the executive branch, not to mandate a backdoor into encryption schemes so that law enforcement can access our data.
I'd have signed it. Nobody asked me, though.
Fair enough. They should have. But so, like, this is one of the things they said. Strong encryption is the cornerstone of the modern information economy security. Encryption protects billions of people every day against countless threats, be they street criminals trying to steal our phones and laptops, computer criminals trying to defraud us, corporate spies trying to obtain our company's most valuable trade secrets, repressive governments trying to stifle dissent, or foreign intelligence agencies trying to compromise our and our allies' most sensitive national security secrets. I agree with that entirely. You have to have strong encryption. And law enforcement hates it because it makes their job harder when they're trying to stop the bad guys. Because it does. It makes their job harder. But here's the problem with that. We can't make just their job easier. Because if a back door exists for them...
It exists for the bad guys. Thank you very much.
It exists for everybody.
That's right.
And if they have it, you can be assured that the bad guys are going to get it. And when I say the bad guys, I mean criminal organizations and foreign governments. And for that matter,
and worse,
if you're a foreign government or a citizen in a foreign country, that includes our intelligence people having access to your data. Of course, theoretically, from a policy standpoint...
Wait, don't they have to go to the FISA court and shed blood before they can do that?
No.
I'm kidding.
No. If only our own people had to actually shed blood, maybe there would be less going to the FISA court. But that's another issue. This stuff doesn't work. And the thing is, we've actually fought this battle... many times. There were the so-called crypto wars, and this was mentioned in this letter. The crypto wars were fought in the 90s during the Clinton administration, and over whether...
Hang on 1 second. Stop it. Sorry.
The crypto wars were fought in the 90s during the Clinton administration over whether or not we could export computer hardware powerful enough to do proper encryption. And the executive branch and the intelligence agencies and the FBI all wanted that not to happen because they somehow thought that if we didn't export it, we could therefore control it. And they lost those battles. Like, everybody who knows anything recommended that the U.S. change its policy, and the U.S. eventually did. You can now, Apple sells Macs all over the world. Dell sells computer all over the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Meanwhile, et cetera. Apple turned that little tidbit into marketing history, if you remember correctly. They did a commercial and said, we're shipping a computer that is... stronger than the military encryption. Strongest. And the tank ran over it, and Apple made hay out of that.
Apple did make hay out of that. And
as well they should, and I agree, by the way, that we need strong encryption, and if this goes the wrong way, it's a bad precedent. Oh, is it a bad... It opens such a wormhole.
Oh, it does. It'll just be a catastrophe. And it drives me nuts that our intelligence folks either don't understand this or really want to, they want to deny reality and pretend otherwise. And I don't, I mean, it's just such an obvious thing. And it is so, like, the only people who ever think this is a good idea are the intelligence folks or the law enforcement folks.
Well, and what difference does it make? If they did that, wouldn't there just be a different, I mean, there'd be somebody would come up with something different, better, and no backdoor a month later, and we'd be back where we were. Yeah, it might not be built in, but anybody that needed real encryption and no backdoor would be using that anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, it's just no matter what you do, you can't win.
Yeah,
it's zero sum.
There's no putting your finger in this particular dike and holding back the flood.
Right.
Because it's going to happen. And, you know, and the reality is that because of encryption, there will be people who might have otherwise been saved, or a theft or other crime that might have been prevented, that will end up happening. I mean, this is a reality, but that happens to be, in my opinion, that happens to be the cost of living in a free society, is that there is risk. You cannot Yes. have perfect safety and perfect freedom. Those two.
But in this case, I think, you know, the typical argument for this is the good of the many, right? That's the typical course you take with this kind of argument. And I don't think this is for the good of the many. I think this will be to the detriment of the many.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what the White House does. I mean, this is a, there's a lot of weight behind this particular organization. There's a lot of money in the form of these major corporations.
Yep. They're not going to just shut up either.
No,
they're gonna be on this until policy is specified.
Yeah, you know, there's another aspect of that too. If you want to talk about national security, keeping American tech companies strong is good for U.S. national security. If we were to hobble our tech companies by this backdoor nonsense, you can be sure that more development money will be poured into tech companies in other countries. You can be absolutely sure of that. And by trying to foist off a backdoor into our tech companies, all we're doing is weakening them in the market and encouraging other countries to be able to beat us with this stuff. And that's not good for national security.
No, not at all.
It is good for these companies to be doing business and to be strong throughout the world, and for them to be American companies.
Do you think there's already a backdoor? Do you think that they've got, you know...
No, I believe Apple. When Apple says that they can't, that they couldn't... that they can't break their own encryption in our own devices, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Well, Apple doesn't have the same computers as the NSA.
Oh, well,
the NSA has better computers than even Apple.
Yeah, that's true. The NSA does have... The NSA develops zero-day exploits. You know, they find and exploit zero-day exploits. I guess that's being redundant there, but...
Redundancy is good. Remember our first topic.
I think that in this case, if Apple and Google and Microsoft are telling us that their encryption is effectively unbreakable, because no encryption is unbreakable, but if that their encryption will take, you know, too long for anybody to actually break, I would imagine that's the case.
Well, it's going to be an interesting thing. I hope we as a country end up doing the right thing.
I hope so, too. I'm not necessarily confident about it.
Well, no, there's politicians involved. There's no way to be confident about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. We're going to end up having to see what's going on. Ellis, I want to mention one more thing. This is like the Bob Show. You have... 4 power computing posters, is that right?
Oh, yes. Yes, the last 4 in the closet, the end of an era. They're from circa 1996. And they're on eBay. We'll put the link in the show notes.
We will put the link in the show notes. These are the Sluggo posters.
Yeah.
There's
two Sluggos, yeah.
Let's kick Intel's ass with 225 megahertz. We're fighting back for the back. This is a different era. And the one of my favorites, the Billy one. My parents had bought me a Mac. Who invited Billy to the party?
These are all drawn by Frank Kozik.
That they're talking about Bill Gates there.
Yes. You know, only the artist and Mike Rosenfeld know for sure.
Yeah, well, it was for sure. But yeah, anyway, Billy. These are gorgeous posters. They've been one of my favorites. Bob, you actually gave me a couple of posters that I didn't have. I've got some additional ones in that set.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got some. And if you watch my TV show, you know that there's some up on my wall in the office, too. I've got a set of three.
Gorgeously framed. Anyway, so these are the last four in Bob's collection. They're up on eBay.
My stash is empty now. That's it. The end of an era. If you want, and it might be the last chance to like acquire more than one at a time.
Yeah.
Because they were made in pretty limited quantities. We didn't print that many of them. We took them to shows, so, you know, there's probably started out with only 10 or 20,000.
Yeah.
And most of those ended up in the garbage the week after.
Right, so or destroyed.
Not that many survived.
Exactly. So anyway, check that out. We're going to have the link up in the show notes. It's on eBay. The title of it, if you're listening, is Set of Four Rare Power Computing Posters. You could probably look it up just by searching for power computing.
Probably. And last time I had one of these on eBay, Frank Kozik bought it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
I guess he didn't have one of those in his collection.
That's pretty funny.
It was pretty funny.
All right. Well, on that happy note, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, and our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's all for this week.
Stay subscribed.
And we'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Thanks for doing the show, Bob.
I felt like Barbara Billingsley. I don't know why.